This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Number of great guests today on the program, as usual. And we're going to lead off by going back to Indianapolis, when the one and only Dan Bonner joins us this morning. Dan, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, guys. Good morning. Good morning. Hope you're enjoying the tournament.
Well, we are.
Yeah, well, I mean,
we are. But from an ACC perspective, it has not been the best of times. In fact, in some respects, the league's not had a losing mark since 1987. So this is kind of like new territory for ACC basketball fans to be out. No Elite Eight, first time since 2014. First losing season since 87. Fewest wins since 79. I mean, those are on the wrong side of the ledger, Dan, that you want when you start talking about late March going into April.
Well, they are on the wrong side of the ledger, but this has been a rather unique year for everybody. And so I think the years that you're quoting in there, 79, 87, all those kind of things, I think that indicates how good the ACC has been over the years. And, you know, I think everybody's entitled to an off year once in a while. And clearly this was one for the ACC, at least in terms of the NCAA tournament.
All right, Dan, I want to go a couple different directions here. I want to go historical here because I said this a moment ago, we're going to hear a lot about 1979. That's going to get thrown up there quite a bit. And Pack and I've already talked about Black Sunday in Raleigh, where Carolina lost to Penn, Duke lost to St. John's in the span of about 4 hours, and the ACC was done. And everybody remembers that was Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and Salt Lake at the end of the year for the national championship. So we're going to push 1979 to the back burner. The way this ended, though, for Florida State and Syracuse, it just kind of felt like the bottom fell out for not just those two, but the rest of the league, given the way the event had unfolded. You're in Indianapolis. How does it set with you on the end for the Noles and for the Orange?
Well, I think the Florida State game was the most, I don't know, frustrating, disappointing, whatever you want to say, because Florida State was a better team than they showed. They looked to me like they were rushed the whole game, and I think you have to give credit to a very good Michigan team for that. Everybody thought that was a good matchup for Florida State. Turned out it really wasn't. Didn't help Florida State that Raekwon Gray got in foul trouble and had to sit a lot of the first half. Of course, it didn't help that one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country didn't make any threes. So it's the tournament. That kind of thing happens. The Syracuse thing, you know, they were playing a really good Houston team, and it's a Houston team that had a lot of time to prepare. And I think that that's one of the advantages that Syracuse sometimes has in this tournament, that if you have a short preparation time for that zone, then it's a problem. But Houston's a very good defensive team. They had a lot of time to prepare. So that really didn't surprise me. You could make the argument, and some people around the country have made the argument, that Syracuse didn't really have the kind of a year that deserved an NCAA tournament bid. I'm not among those, but Syracuse proved that all you have to do is get in. You get in, you're healthy, you have a chance. So I wasn't surprised by the Syracuse outcome, but I was a little taken back by not the fact that Florida State lost, but just the way they did it.
Well, listen, we have an 11 and a 12 seed in the Elite Eight. I mean, you know, once you're in, you get a chance to prove your worth. I don't care what league you're from. And, of course, the Pac-12 with three in the Elite Eight, Bill Walton's having a party as we speak. But, Dan, I know you got on Tuesday USC and Gonzaga, which for folks that stayed up last night and watched SC, 10 of 17 from three. They were terrific. You know, the Mobley, the boys are rocking and rolling. Their guard play has been great. And Gonzaga is awesome, right? So the game you've got Tuesday has the chance to have incredible offensive fireworks all over the place. But for the most part, everybody really struggled shooting the basketball. And I know we're in different venues, and there's the pressure of the fact we're in the Sweet 16 getting the Elite Eight. Why do you think that is? I mean, Florida State had a miserable time shooting the basketball, and really, for the most part, down the stretch, they had a tough time offensively. But why is everybody struggling making threes in this tournament in Indianapolis? What's the story there?
You know, I have no idea. It could be, Gonzaga doesn't seem to be having any trouble making any kind of shots.
Right.
But, you know, I think that teams – you're stepping up in class a little bit, particularly here these last couple of rounds. You're facing pretty good defensive teams. Everybody knows that the three-point shot is a key part of the offense. Teams are working really hard to run people off the three-point line. But sometimes it's just bad shooting. Sometimes, and I think that's what it is. You know, I had to laugh. I listened to Charles Barkley on one of his segments at a halftime or in between games or something, where he said, you know, none of these college guys can shoot contested threes. You know, Charles, he's got some pearls of wisdom that you got to listen to. He didn't explain why, and I can't explain why, but certainly that's been a theme of this tournament.
All right, so, Dan, we've heard a lot about the process in Indianapolis, but now that we're a couple weeks into this thing and we're down to eight on the men's side, is there any advantage, or is this just kind of haphazard? You mentioned at the top it's kind of been that different kind of year. Maybe the trickle-down's affected the ACC. But once we've gotten to this bubble tournament that they don't want to call a bubble tournament, any pros or cons there that you're picking up in your prep from some of these teams?
No, not really. These teams, you know, they've been here a while. You know, there's only eight of them left. I think the one thing that has been very interesting about this, and all the teams say this, every single one, that here in the bubble, and it is a bubble. I mean, these teams are isolated. They get to go out like to Victory Field, wherever the heck that is. I don't know. We asked Eric Musselman if he has his team had been out, and he said, "Oh, you mean our yard time?" And that's, you know, he's trying to be funny. But the teams are sort of they are isolated, and the one thing everybody has said is during the season, they isolated individually. Everybody was in their own apartments, and they couldn't get together as a team. But since they've been here in Indianapolis, they've had more team bonding, chemistry time, whatever you want to call it. And so, of course, they're tired of being cooped up, but they understand what the goal is. And so, no, I don't think there's any advantage or disadvantage to anybody now that we're down to the end. I think it's been a remarkable job logistically out here. And I think it's been a remarkable job by the players all season long to deal with this and to get to this point.
Dan, I want to get back to the ACC a second. You know, so the season's over for the men. Louisville's still standing for the ladies. We'll address that later in the show. But from the men's perspective, league comes off a lousy postseason, right? Only way to describe it, 4-7. That's not what anybody was drawing up. You get this transfer portal, which is absolutely totally out of control, but it is what it is, right? And you kind of knew we're going down this road. You got a loaded league with Hall of Fame coaches in their 70s. Where is the ACC men's basketball product? And I said it because, and before you answer, I'll just preface the fact the league won the championship in 15, 17, 19 with three different teams, all right? We are ridiculously spoiled in this league of expecting national championships, Final Fours, Elite Eights are given like I eat Girl Scout cookies. Now, all of a sudden, it's all taken away from you, and we didn't have a tournament last year. So it really feels 2 years removed from really no magic in late March and April. So the first thing you think of is, oh, man, the league's in trouble. Where is the ACC men's basketball product, big picture?
Mark, I think big picture, it's not a problem. I said before, and I will still make the argument, that I think it's a down year. There's no question. You can't argue that the league had a super year. It did not. And for whatever reason, I don't think it has anything to do with the age of the coaches. The transfer portal is there. I think in the ACC, as in all leagues, people have to figure out how to use it to their advantage. You know, maybe we're not going to be so much one and done anymore. Maybe we're going to be transfer portal. You know, maybe you're going to have to use the grad transfer rule more effectively. You know, I don't know, but I think college basketball is in a transition. But I think historically the ACC has always managed the transitions, and I think they will this time. So, you know, I'm not pessimistic about the future of the ACC. I think it's, you know, historically been a great league, and I think it will be a great league again. It just had a bad year this year. You can't sugarcoat that. It just had a bad year.
All right. So to that effect, though, what are the marks we're looking for in the offseason here, given kind of the climate? What are the things, the two or three things maybe you want us to keep an eye on to say, okay, the league is going to continue its momentum. It didn't have a great year, but you know, there's a lot of reasons for not having great years. Some, the landscape of what we're trying to do. Two, maybe the inexperience at certain levels of the league. What are you looking for as we move forward, though?
Well, you know, I think that, Mark, you mentioned the transfer portal, and I think you got to look. Okay, we now, right at the moment, we know who everybody is losing or possibly losing in the transfer portal. So I think you have to look at who's coming in the transfer portal and evaluate that the same way that you evaluate the high school recruiting. And, you know, so I just think it's a matter of who you get. And that's the key thing. You know, you can talk about these Hall of Fame coaches and all the other stuff, but ultimately the league is its players. And so who are you going to get in as players? And I think that's the yardstick, Wes. I don't think there's three or four. I think there's one. Who are you going to get as players? And if you have good players, you're going to have good teams. And if you have good teams, you're going to have a good league.
Listen, I know you have Gonzaga on Tuesday, so I will ask this question appropriately. We have three number one seeds still left on the men's side. Will all of them get to the Final Four? Yes or no?
Yes.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Like right that. There. Bang. No need to do the afternoon radio show. Bonner just did it for you.
I'm going
to
use that. I may use that. That line may get used during off campus this afternoon from 4 to 7.
Yeah.
So all three ones are going to make it, huh? How about that? All right, let me ask one more question.
Wait a minute.
I know. None of us know it, but you're an expert. I mean, we're just sitting here in our respective basements. We're sitting in our respective basements with pets. That's what we are. All right, let me ask you this. The Pac-12 has been sensational, right? 12-2 in the tournament so far. They'd only won 14 tournament games the three previous NCAA tournaments. They've won 12 this tournament. Go figure. But nevertheless, will the Pac-12 be on the couch for the Final Four? Yes or no?
Wow.
Well, let's see. I think USC, I think it's a really close, a really good game, but I think they lose to Gonzaga. I think that
UCLA,
Michigan and UCLA, I think that'll be a pretty good game, but I think Michigan wins that game. And
Oregon State, Houston.
I think, you know, I really like Oregon State. I've had them a couple times. So the answer to your question is no. The Pac-12 will not be on the couch.
A 12 in the Final Four by Dan Bonner. Wow. You heard it here first. A 12 seed is making it to the Final Four.
This is the kind of analysis you get at 8 in the morning, not at 2:20 in the morning, Packer. That's I just want to point that out.
That's a good point. I tell you what, though, with Bonner going with the Beavers, those folks on the West Coast could be calling you at midnight, which would be 3 of your time, my man. Get ready for it. You jump on that Beaver bandwagon.
Well, you know, Oregon State, I've had them a couple of times in this tournament, and I've you can't see anybody like face to face. You do it like this. You do Zoom calls. But I have been very, very impressed with their kids. Ethan Thompson. We had Ethan Thompson and Jared Lucas on Zooms, and boy, they were impressive kids. And Wayne Tinkle, the coach, seems to have an idea of what he's doing. Not that the other coaches don't, but he had a very interesting perspective. He said, you know, I coached at Montana for years, and that was a one-bid league. So now you have a little bit of a cushion if you're in a league where you get multiple bids. But I don't worry if we're not playing well during the season, because I know the whole thing is you play as well as you can at the end of the season and you win the conference tournament. And that's what they did. So yeah. I think – and they keep talking about how they're playing with house money. They're just having a good time. So I've seen them. I've seen them perform very well. I've had a chance to talk with the kids, a couple of the kids. I've been very impressed with them, and I would not be surprised if they won the game. So I'm going to say yes, they're going to beat Houston and go to the Final Four.
How about that? Cool.
All right. A couple of things before we let you go. One, please tell Kevin and Dana hello. You guys have done a phenomenal job. It's always been a great watch.
Kevin's just the best.
Oh, he's phenomenal. How about a shout-out to the Gladiators? Everybody's going to want to know about this hat, and I know what the hat is, but why don't you tell everybody what the ball cap is, because there's a good story here, right?
Well, VFA 106 is the replacement air group, basically the training squadron at the Naval Air Station Oceana in Virginia Beach, And that was the last squadron that my son was a part of. He was part of that squadron. Yep. And so he's very good when he, I have hats from his, the squadron with which he deployed, the operational squadron VF 81, the Sunliners. And so this is the Gladiators. They are the replacement air group, the RAG, at Oceana.
Very cool.
There you go.
Love that. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Kerry. Kerry is the man now. Naval Academy grad, right? Let's go ahead, get it all out there. Naval Academy grad, naval aviator. He was the man. He knew what he was doing. That guy's big time.
While we're talking, this is obviously the ACC network, but he also holds a master's degree in aerospace engineering from Georgia Tech. So takes after his mom, guys.
That's strong right there now. Seriously, that's some heat right there at 8:18 a.m. right there. That's good stuff. I like that.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Dan Bonner, the best. Appreciate it. Safe travels back from Indianapolis. Don't forget, we have got lacrosse for you this week, and it's a good one. Thursday night, 7 o'clock. How much better does it get than number one Carolina, number two Duke? You know, you hear about the basketball game pack? This deserves your attention Thursday night at 7. Battle of the Blues in Lax. This will be a good show right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to Texas. Louisville marches on in the women's event. And a tough, tough weekend for Westmore and NC State. We'll cover the ladies' card when we continue on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Play at the end of the game. I mean, if it's not a Sports Center play of the day, I mean, that's one of the best basketball plays I've seen a kid make in a split second. You know, it's not like it's a fast break and she throws it behind her back. It's a loose ball, and it was really the only pass that she could make. And she made a perfect pass, and Dana goes in and finishes.
Thank goodness Louisville finished. Dana goes for 29. Louisville puts a 60 spot up, and they move on to the Elite Eight, and they get Stanford, the number one seed. And, you know, tough weekend for NC State as a one seed going down.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech was a five seed, taking on a really talented number one South Carolina team, which was, again, no shame in losing the Gamecocks with what the Dawn Staley's built. But for Louisville, man, given what had happened, man, the men getting wiped out, NC State getting upset, Georgia Tech losing. Hey, no pressure, Louisville. It's tag year it. But the good news is Jeff Walls and company took care of business, and they live to play another day. Yeah, but Stanford will be tough. That's a one versus a two, just the way you like it.
And, Pac, I thought that they were surgical too, didn't you, Louisville? I just thought they went about their business. And you know what? Dana Evans wanted to be in that moment. She's talked about that with us. You know, there's long term here, and she plays to the long game as well as anybody in women's college basketball right now, because she cherishes the opportunity. It's, and I think she's done a tremendous job leading this team. And you know, when the chips go in the middle of the table, the bigger the game. She's, look at that stat: 5 games prior to averaging 13 points, shooting 31%. Sunday, she wasn't having it. This team will not lose type thing, you know?
Well, I don't know if you saw it last week, because I know you were fighting it. But Jeff Walls was with us, and we talked about the pressure on Dana, 2-time ACC Player of the Year. She had not shot the ball well.
Right.
And he just basically said, hey, listen, you know what? Your legacy's cemented. You know, you just go out and play and have fun. You know, this game's not going to alter how people think of you and what you've accomplished as a person, as a player, and everything else. And lo and behold, that little rah-rah speech that he gave on the air last week and what he said yeah. to Dana certainly paid dividends, because she was great yesterday. That's Dana Evans. And she's somebody who can say, hey, get on my back, let's go. And they've got other players, too, that can jump on board and beat you. But a 29 spot from Dana was the job yesterday. So, like I said, from an ACC perspective, from a Louisville perspective, thank goodness, because up to that point, we were 0-4 in our Sweet 16 matchups on the men's and the women's side. But Louisville moves on. Like I said, we'll play a really, really good team in Stanford, the one seed. And a lot of chalk on the ladies' tournament, Wes. We talked about that a lot last week. I know you weren't here, but I think it was 40 of 48 games played heading into the weekend. Higher-seeded teams took care of business. There was a little volatility over the weekend from that perspective. But for Louisville, they take care of business. They did what they're supposed to do. Now they're one game away from getting back to a Final Four. And again, a talented team. And when you got a star like Dan Evans, you got a chance. You definitely have a shot.
Well, and you got a 1-2 punch with Van Lith as well. That's the other thing. We'll talk with Muffet McGraw in the 9 o'clock hour about where Louisville is. Counter to Louisville's success is the disappointment Westmore and NC State must feel, Pac.
Yep.
Because the top seed, they become the first number one to be bumped from San Antonio on the women's side. And the other idea is that NC State, it's a hard look in the mirror. Some of this was unforced. It was self-inflicted. The turnovers, the missed shots, the opportunities. Terry Morin's done a great job, by the way, coaching Indiana. But the reality of it is NC State could never quite clear that hurdle against the Hoosiers this weekend.
And I know that Kunane, I saw her press conference afterwards, and she said, you know, our goal was to get and win a national championship. So that will burn bright during the offseason for NC State. This was a team that was really locked and loaded, and if completely healthy, with Kayla Jones, I think did make a difference down the stretch. You saw that in their last game. This was a team that was good enough to win it all. And I know that Wes Moore and all of them will sit around and it'll hurt for a while. Mm. There's no question about it. This one hurts because you know you were good enough to get to the Final Four with a chance. The Wolfpack will be back, though. Wes Moore has really built a great basketball program in Raleigh. And to go back-to-back ACC champs, another Sweet 16, but they'll come back for more. This is a team that will be hungry heading into 21-22.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Elisa Kunane, I mean, your Reina Perez obviously came in as a grad transfer, but they had a really, really good year. And you're right, it stings 72 hours, 96 hours, but the reality of it is NC State's in really good shape. I mean, just a tremendous, tremendous program who's had really good success. And it's going to be fun to watch them see if they can make another run here and what that run looks like, right? And we talked about it during the course of the year, and now that we're down to Louisville and nobody else remaining, these two programs have buoyed the rest of the league. Quentin Hillsman said it, right, a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the tournament field being announced. I think it's one of the things you have to look at if you're the Atlantic Coast Conference. We're talking about the men's side, maybe a degree of uncertainty, kind of where does men's basketball go in the ACC? Well, in women's basketball, you can see it starting to ascend across the board, and that's got to be awfully encouraging for this league right now.
You're right. And by the way, are you giving me a little Hinkle Fieldhouse with the sun coming in there? I don't think I've ever seen that look on you before. That little Hinkle.
It's a very nice one. Yeah, sure. Or old Alexander Coliseum.
Yeah.
Right? Which way
right?
You want to take it?
No, let's go old Alexander Coliseum because that leads into Georgia Tech, and you know, Nell Fortner had a tremendous year with her ladies. And,
yeah.
Like I said, there's no shame in losing to a number one seed in the tournament, but Georgia Tech emerged as really the best team in the league outside the two beasts that you were talking about with Louisville and NC yeah. State, because we knew those two were going to be really, really good. We didn't know who else was going to emerge. Really, Georgia Tech turned out to be that team this year. Good year in Atlanta.
They did. And Lorella Kubai, obviously a senior player on that team, but there's a lot of encouraging signs for Nell Fortner. Again, I go back to the fact that I think you've had those two teams nationally do a lot of good, and now the building blocks, Nell Fortner being one of them, Courtney Banghart at Carolina, even Jen Hoover taking Wake to the tournament, those things count right now. And that's something that I think there's a lot of momentum built. And look, we didn't even get a chance to really talk about Duke and Virginia this year, especially what Carol Lawson could potentially do, right?
Right.
But Nell Fortner did a fantastic job at Georgia Tech. It is hard. It is hard to tell you, just based on their history, how good a job she's done in 2 years putting Georgia Tech on that stage in a Sweet 16. I mean, trust me, there's not a lot there. There are blips on the radar for Georgia Tech and women's basketball, but Nell Fortner's done a phenomenal job. There is no question about that. So that covers the women's game from San Antonio. When we come back, we'll dial up South Florida, Pro Day later today on ACC Network. Manny Diaz, the head coach of the Canes, joins us next. Looking forward to catching up with Coach ahead of Pro Day and also a remembrance on a legendary coach of the Canes, Howard Schnellenberger, who passed away over the weekend. Coming up next on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This
Packer and Durham on a Monday. We cover everything you need to know. What's going on in the ACC? That includes a little football. Well, you heard us. We'll go down to beautiful Coral Gables. Bring on the head football coach of your Miami Hurricanes. That'd be Manny Diaz. Manny, first of all, good morning. How's life treating you?
Life is good. Good morning, man.
It's always a pleasure having you on. I know we got Pro Day getting cranked up today. Is there any way that we get everybody back for at least one more year of eligibility? I mean, I know Pro Day is a big day, but I know you'd like to have those guys back for at least one more year.
Yeah, that'd be nice. There's one of them that I wish we had back last year.
Yeah, but right.
It's actually fun, you know, seeing those guys come through the building again.
And I think they're all going to really smash it today.
Manny, these pro days are different, right? Because this is the pro day. There's no combine per se in Indianapolis, things of that nature. What's the, in as much as you can tell, how different is the mentality about this event in compared to recent years?
Well, I do think there's you know, in the past when you had the combine,
you know, hey, if you didn't
perform well at the combine, you had your pro day where you could maybe make
up some ground. And
this is it. And then the NFL is limited. They're only allowed to send three representatives from each team to any of the college pro days.
So
you really are trying to impress with this one opportunity that you have.
I know this much. You know, we've seen a couple pro days from across the land here, and it's always a special opportunity for these guys. But Wes, you know what, and I know you just got done doing the Duke spring game in practice. And we watched the Clemson workout, and the Pitt guys knocked it out of the park, and all that stuff. I get nervous watching this stuff, and I got no skin in the game, but you just know that these guys, it's like, man, I get a chance to showcase what I'm doing now in front of any NFL eyeball, and I don't care if it's a vertical cone drill, whatever. Coach, why is it that an average fan would get nervous? And again, I got no skin in the game, but you just know, hey, here it is, man. These guys have worked so hard to put themselves in a position to get the National Football League and, you know, a chance to really make a great first impression, if you will. I don't know what it is about that from a fan perspective, but do you get nervous for the guys or do you say, hey, you know what? They put in the work. They'll knock this thing out of the park.
Well, I want them to be confident because the most important thing is to have great film, right? You know, play well and then have your pro day really back up what you put on the field. But it's weird, you know, we coach a team sport and at pro day, all of a sudden they turn into golfers, right? Because they're sitting there all alone and everybody's watching them, you know, run around cones or run a 40 or bench. And, you know, so it's a little bit awkward, you know, because we're not used to that. You know, we do play as a unit, but again, I think they'll all do very well. They're all very athletic and they've all worked very hard for today.
All right, Coach, I want to move kind of that awkward balance here of pro days, guys going to the next level with guys you got coming back. Because I know spring ball is kind of underway as well. You're trying to get that organized. Tell me it's different than it was of no spring ball. I know that. But tell me it feels a little more normal this go round than what you didn't have a year ago.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. We're about 7 days into our spring practice. Good to just get back to developing your team. You know, a lot of our young guys really missed out on not having a spring and a summer from last year. But what is unusual, and in a good way this spring, is because we had so many players come back. This is as competitive of a spring as I can ever remember anywhere in my coaching career because you're really, you know, your ones and twos are both pretty functional units. You got a lot of guys that have a lot of game experience. So, I think this is true around the country. We're all just carrying more players on our roster in spring than you normally do because normally you lose your seniors and your freshmen aren't quite there yet. And with so many seniors coming back and guys, you know, coming back and delaying their NFL dreams, it's really helped us have a great spring.
Manny, I know another thing. It's one thing to have great competition, which every coach wants. But you don't have to say a whole lot until you pull out that 21 calendar and schedule and say, guess what, boys? We're not eating cupcakes until we get to conference play. First up is Alabama. You got almost – it's like good news, bad news, right? The good news is it's a great motivator. Bad news, you got to go play those guys at some point in time. But, man, that schedule, you got to be running full throttle week one.
which is great because that adds a great sense of urgency for our entire offseason program. And really what you're talking about is how do we get us to the level that we want to get Miami at? You know, if we concern ourselves about Miami, ultimately we'll play better no matter what the opposition is. So, you know, we have a lot of respect for what they've done there at Alabama. We know that'll be a difficult contest, but it's still a new year. There's new players on both teams. And, you know, look, you got to, if you want to be the best, you got to play the best. And we're excited to go, you know, line up against those guys.
All right, Coach, I can hear them all at home coming right through the screen or listening on the radio. Well, I can't believe Packer and Durham have had Coach Diaz on this show, and they hadn't asked about quarterback yet. So tell us about De'Eriq King. How's the rehab? What's his schedule? Is he on time? Do you expect him back at some point ahead of schedule? Where are we with De'Eriq King?
De'Eriq is ahead of schedule. He's doing great, like what we thought he would. You know, whatever they ask him to do in rehab, he wins upset, you know, and if anything, we have to slow him down. But it's just been fun to watch him just hit every benchmark and do everything they ask him to do. It's not a surprise if you know who he is as a person. Now, speaking of quarterback play, that's also given us a great opportunity this spring to really look at some of, you know, maybe our quarterbacks for the future. Tyler Van Dyke and Jake Garcia both scrimmaged very, very well this past Saturday. And look, well, we know the formula for success here is, you know, we feel like we should play great defense at Miami. If we have a quarterback, historically, when Miami's got a really good quarterback, Miami competes for championships. And so for De'Eriq to come back this year, put the work in this offseason to get him back healthy. De'Eriq would play against Alabama if he was on crutches. He'd be fighting them off with crutches in either hand. He's not going to not be in that game. But it's fun to see the other two compete, and we want to have, you know, quarterbacks here for the future, keep recruiting great quarterbacks, and have that be part of our formula for success.
Manny, I know it's still early in the spring, but any other areas that have impressed you, at least in the early going, outside of quarterback in terms of depth and guys stepping up?
I think both of our lines of scrimmage, you know, I think the experience that we have coming back on our offensive line, you know, we were really, really young a couple of years ago and took some lumps because of it. And again, kind of that older, more mature team we have this spring and creating some depth, you know, because ultimately depth equals competition. You mentioned it a few minutes ago. Competition is going to motivate everybody to perform a little bit better because when you're comfortable in your job, you know, we get complacent. That's human nature. So, on both lines of scrimmage, to be able to really have it too deep of guys that can be pushing each other, I think is really helping us.
Hey, we're watching the transfer portal kind of explode in college basketball. You have seen a little bit of that trickle down in football. I think it's got to be a more particular fit at times in football than it does just from a roster inventory standpoint in basketball. But Charleston Rambo is a guy who a lot of people have some expectation of. What's his addition to your program been like? What's that going to ultimately mean when you get around to August camp?
Well, we just felt like we made a lot of strides in our passing game last year. But, you know, again, some different types of defenses and different types of coverages, we felt like we lacked someone that could really just blow the top off a defense. And really, with their speed and athleticism, put some fear in some defensive coordinators that we can beat you down the field. And Charleston has shown that through the first couple weeks we've had here of spring ball. So, you know, we're just trying to get more and more explosive on offense. And it was exciting that, you know, we were able to you know, be a good landing spot for Charleston.
Manny, I think of Miami football, and I think national championships. And it all started with a guy by the name of Howard Schnellenberger. And I was in the Orange Bowl the night he beat Tom Osborne in Nebraska, one of the best football games you'd ever want to see. And it was the first of many that eventually came to Coral Gables. We lost Coach over the weekend. Thoughts about Howard Schnellenberger and his impact on the Miami and actually Louisville football programs?
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to go to that game that night. It was past my bedtime. I got to stay up and watch it, but I couldn't be in the Orange Bowl.
College football, if you go back and look at everyone that's won national championships, there is an establishment in college football.
Miami was not in that establishment. I don't know if people really realize the situation that this football program was in when Howard Schnellenberger took over. They were considering dropping the sport entirely. And so he didn't just win a national championship. He quite literally rose a program from the dead. And in a very short amount of time to take on the establishment, to beat a blue blood like Nebraska,
at that time, taking down Notre Dame that year. It was just something that, if you think about it, I don't think there's a comp. I don't know another time, another program that's gone from being so out of the mix in college football to becoming a power and a dynasty. And I think that's why Coach Nuremberg deserves to be in the College Football Hall of Fame. I just don't think there's any, no one has ever done what he's done, and he deserves all the credit for that. And this program will forever be indebted to him for it.
I think the other thing, too, that when you start thinking about the assistant coaches he had, and you know this at Miami, that Howard Snellenberger was the head coach, but he was also a guy who valued the assistant, right? And those teams that he had were just full of iconic assistant coaches. Some went on to be great head coaches, but he just had unbelievable staffs, Manny.
He did. Well, he learned from Bear Bryant, you know, who you know, had very similar great staffs himself. So, look, you know, we all talk about head coaches because, you know, it's easy to talk about. But, you know, a head coach is only as good as a staff. And I think the best head coaches recognize that and are great at picking and developing their coaches. And so I think that was and there's been a laundry list of amazing assistant coaches that come through this program.
Well, he was a great one. And like I said, he when you look back at Miami and Louisville football, you know what? There's a reason that you'll see his name all over both institutions in terms of the impact, footprint, fingerprint, championships, the whole routine. And he started at Miami. There's no question about that. And I know you're looking to continue it. And we wish you the very best. We always appreciate the time. And I look forward to watching the Pro Day today.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Manny Diaz, head football coach at the University of Miami, the Miami Pro Day, right here on ACC Network. I'm telling you now, if you've missed an opportunity to see what we offered at Clemson or places like that, you'll want to catch this at 1 o'clock right here on ACC Network. We got the group from the huddle sitting in, Jordan Cornette, along with Eric McClain, E.J. Manuel, and Mark Richt, Greg Rousseau, Quincy Roche, Jalen Phillips, and Brevin Jordan. All set to go through their paces. Telling you, worth your time. By the way, over on ACC Network Extra at 1:30, Duke's Pro Day. You can 2-for-1 this thing, Packer. Yep. It's a heck of a deal. 1 o'clock live on ACC Network. You see Miami. Duke's is at 1:30 on the ESPN Plus app at ACC Network Extra. It's a busy day. Good day of football right here on ACCN. When we come back, Andrea Adelson chronicles the coaching life of Howard Snellenberger. When Packer and Durham continues on a Monday on the Atlantic Coast Conference Television Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. Just talked to Manny Diaz, head football coach at Miami. And Wes, as we pointed out, college football, yep. Forget the ACC a second. College football lost a really, really great, great coach with Howard Snellenberger. And he had ties, obviously, to Miami and also Louisville, as we speak from an ACC perspective. But he's the guy that really started things for the Canes as far as the national championships.
Yeah, no doubt. I think you got to go back to that night in the Orange Bowl where if you knew football, you already knew who Howard Snellenberger was. But his family announced over the weekend that he had passed away at the age of 87. Manny mentioned this, though, in our visit a moment ago. Howard Snellenberger came from the Bear Bryant tree.
Right.
And when he came to Miami, he basically birthed that football program. And important to remember, Pac, you just said this during the break, that Howard Snellenberger at Miami and Bobby Bowden at Florida State basically gave birth to those football programs. And Snellenberger shouldn't be lost in that story. The Jimmy Johnson era, sure, all that counts. Dennis Erickson, national championships, so on and so forth. But Howard Snellenberger really, really created what ultimately became the University of Miami. Really good coach. Played for the Bear at Kentucky, then coached for him at Alabama. Recruited Joe Namath out of Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. It's pretty good. But really, as Andrew Adelson tells you, that's only the beginning of Howard Snellenberger.
Howard Snellenberger holds a special spot in college football history as a coach and a creator, revitalizing two major programs, Miami and Louisville. What Schnellenberger did with the Hurricanes remains one of the greatest transformations in college football history, turning a once floundering football program into a dynasty known as the U, all sparked by Miami's first national championship in 1983. Before his arrival in 1979, Miami administrators considered dropping the sport as the losses mounted and morale dipped. But Schnellenberger saw something different. It did not take long for the Hurricanes to climb to national relevance as Schnellenberger focused his recruiting efforts primarily on the untapped potential across South Florida, declaring the area the State of Miami. His work culminated in the 1984 Orange Bowl against Nebraska. Miami went in as the underdog on its home field. But when Kenny Calhoun batted down Turner Gill's two-point conversion pass, the Hurricanes sealed the 31-30 upset and the first national championship in school history. Though he was only there for the 83 title, he laid the foundation for a Miami program that would win three more national titles over the next eight seasons.
I'm very pleased to announce that Howard Schnellenberger has been named head football coach at the University of Louisville.
During his 10 years as head coach, Louisville played in and won its first New Year's Day bowl game, a 34-7 victory over Alabama in the 1991 Fiesta Bowl, capping the Cardinals' first 10-win season. Schnellenberger also spearheaded the construction of an on-campus stadium, and the current football complex bears his name. Just one example of an indelible mark that Howard Schnellenberger has made on the sport of college football.
Great coach, and that's incredibly sad to see his pass. But, you know, age of 87, incredible run, though. But, Wes, I was at the game that night. I was dating a girl at Clemson who was from Miami, and so I decided to make a road trip. And had some buddies down there, and so we went to that game. And it's one of the best football games I have ever seen. And,
you think?
Well, no, let me tell you why. Because Nebraska, if Nebraska, when they scored, it could have kicked the extra point, go 31 all. We had no overtimes. It could end in a tie, and Tom Osborne, Dr. Tom, would have won his first national championship. But he said, no, we've come this way. We're here to win the football game. Let's go for two. And he did. And it didn't work, and Miami wins the national championship. Bernie Kosar was awesome that night. Orange Bowl, which is still one of my favorite buildings of all time. It shook, it rocked like you can only expect. But I gathered so much respect for what Miami won in terms of winning that and what they became. But that night, even with Nebraska football, as great as their tradition was, that I just thought it was awesome that Dr. Tom Osborne said, no, we're going for the win. And I wonder how many guys back in that day and age and again, he had never won it. Devaney and won all those, and he had the pressure. When are you ever going to win one? Could have kicked the extra point. Mm-hmm. We're done here. 31 all. I got one good. No, we're going to go win it. And he didn't get it done. But what a football game. But for Howard Schnellenberger, what a great coach. An incredible coach.
Oh, an incredible coach is right. I only had a chance to meet Coach Schnellenberger very briefly. And I'll share with you that sometimes when you see these guys and they're these iconic figures, right, whether coaches, players, whatever the case may be, and then you see them in person, sometimes it's a completely different filter, right? In fact, you know what I mean by that. You see somebody for years, and then all of a sudden you see them in person and you think, well, that's not at all what my expectation or my vision would be of meeting that person. That was not the case with Coach Schnellenberger. The man had the pipe in the suit pocket, in the coat pocket. He had the open collared shirt on, the thing like, you know, and he had that pipe there, and you thought, well, that's exactly the way you envisioned Howard Schnellenberger. It was 10 seconds. It was a handshake. Coach, nice to meet you. It was in a group of people, and we moved on. But a very nice man, no doubt singularly successful as a football coach. The interesting tie to the ACC is Miami and Louisville. And Pac, I think some guys, and we can pinpoint throughout ACC football, but when you talk about the programs at the University of Miami and the University of Louisville, it'd be hard-pressed to not give Howard Schnellenberger his due. His name deserves to be on the football facility at the University of Louisville. because, as Andrea said in the piece, he's as responsible for the success there as anybody else. And sometimes I think we lose sight of the, quote, forefathers of these programs. But Howard Schnellenberger, clearly that guy at Miami, and well stated to be that guy at the University of Louisville, too.
Well, as you pointed out, he played for Bear Bryant at Kentucky, coached with him at Alabama. And yep. If you remember all the interviews with Howard Schnellenberger, he kind of had that same kind of Bear Bryant growl, right? I mean, yes, he ain't going here, like, yeah. We're going to run the football, we're going to throw it down. I mean, and if you didn't know, if you closed your eyes, you'd go, hey, you know what? Does he really talk that way, or is he just stealing that from Paul Bear Bryant?
Because,
you know, because Bear, you'd hear a Bear Bryant interview, you wouldn't know what he said, but you knew what he said was important, right? And Schnellenberger felt the same way, that I'm not sure what he said, but whatever he said, he's right. And I'll tell you what, you better do what he's saying, because that guy knows what he's doing. But he had that same kind of growl, mumble to him. But, boy, he could coach. And like I said, Miami, as Manny Diaz said, they were in no man's land before he got there. Didn't even know you'd have a football program. And I promise you, if not for Howard Schnellenberger, there is no way in the world Miami is where they are with all those national championships. Oh. Guarantee you.
Yeah, I certainly think at the University of Miami and the University of Louisville, it is more than just a note. By the way, if you're talking about bowl wins, Howard Schnellenberger is on a very interesting list of most bowl wins without a loss. And look at this list now. You couldn't name, if I told you Howard Schnellenberger is on the list with 6 bowl wins without a loss and told you to name the other 3 guys on the list with 5 or more, Tom Herman?
I would have gotten Tom Herman. I will text from time to time with Mr. Herman. So I'm well aware of his deal. I would not have guessed Howard Jones. I would not have guessed Warren Woodson. But there again, if you're asking me trivia questions, you know, I'm Mr. Trivia. Gotten Tom Herman. I would have gotten that one right.
Yeah.
Thank God for the Alamo Bowl.
Come on, really?
Yes, really. I mean, I really shouldn't be mocking that, because I'll tell you what, old Tom Herman showed up for a Peach Bowl against an ACC team not too long ago and took them to the woodshed. So again, you can't mock that too much. Just saying.
All right. Monday's Power Hour features Muffet McGraw. And we're going to talk a little bit about the thrill of victory, but also the agony of defeat as well with Muffet. Because it's been a rough weekend for ACC Hoops. We got one team left to ride. It's Jeff Walls in Louisville on the women's side in San Antonio. We are empty on the men's card in Indianapolis. Power Hour is next with Muffet McGraw. John Rittman, the head softball coach at Clemson, also stopping by, too. Looking forward to that visit as we move on ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.